Listen up. I hate to have commercials interrupt this interview, so I'm going to tell you about three sponsors quickly now, and then we're going to go right into the program, starting with Walker Corporate Law. If you need a lawyer who understands the startup world and the tech community, I want you to go to walkercorporatelaw.com. Next, I want to tell you about Shopify. When your friend asks you, "How can I sell something online?" I want you to send them to Shopify and explain to them that Shopify stores are easy to set up. They increase sales, and they'll make your friend's products look great. Shopify. Finally, I want to tell you about Grasshopper. Do you want a phone number that people can call and then press 1 for sales, 2 for tech support, etc., and have all of the calls be routed to the right person's cell phone? Well, get your number from grasshopper.com. All right, let's get started. Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart. Hey, get this. Today I've got a founder on who got paying customers for her business before she even launched a product. Esther DeBoer is the founder of ShootZilla, which helps photographers manage their photo shoots. I wanted to do this interview to show how founders are discovering their customers' pain before launching and how they're validating a solution or validating their solution for that pain by asking customers to pay up. Esther, welcome.
Thank you.
You got them to pay up. How much revenue have you generated so far?
About $10,000 to $11,000.
$10,000 to $11,000.
Yeah.
Hey, already I'm seeing a discrepancy between what you told me and what you told April and what you're saying. I've got 12,000 on my screen. Where's the difference?
Yeah, that's including VAT.
Including what?
VAT, which is taxes in the Netherlands.
Oh, I see. So including taxes that they pay you $12,000, then you pay those taxes out in the Netherlands, and we're basically keeping $10,000 to $11,000.
Yeah, okay. So far.
Is that where you are right now in the Netherlands?
Yeah, so it's including VAT. I'm at like 13 or 14 now.
All right. How have you launched the product yet?
No, I'm going to launch 1st of July.
Okay. All right. And we're actually doing this interview about 10 days before your launch. We'll publish it after your launch. And clearly, this is my typical interview. I usually wait for companies to have a product that's launched, and I am very strict about how much revenue I want them to make, or that I want them to see to show big revenue. But I'm doing this interview to make a point. I want to show how entrepreneurs, as I said at the top of the interview, are selling first and then building a product. Do you feel bad having collected money from people without having a product to show them?
No, not at all. It was actually a quite natural thing to do for me because I already have two companies, mm-hmm. and I just wanted to make this one work. So I wanted to be really, really, really sure that this product is needed and people were willing to pay for it.
Why did you want to be really sure? Did you have a time in the past where you didn't make sure and things didn't go right?
Yeah, my other company is, it was like an inspirational idea from me and another partner. Uh-huh. And it's still going, but it's going slow. We didn't validate it with customers. We just launched and invested a lot of money in it.
How much money did you invest in the business?
Money about 12,000 euros. Okay. And a lot of time.
12,000 euros, a lot of time. And I'm guessing that you didn't make $12,000 back from that yet.
No.
Wow.
Not yet.
How much time was it?
Well, it's still live. So it's now live for a year and a half.
Okay.
Yeah. And half a year before we launched, of course.
What was the inspiration for that previous business? And I'm going to get to ShootZilla in a moment and show how you did things differently now. But there was an inspiration there. What was it?
It's a platform for photographers where we sell to customers portrait shoots, and it's basically a fast and easy way to find a photographer near you.
Okay.
Yeah, and we want to take the magic out of the photography business, so people don't have to worry about the prices of the prints afterwards. Everything is set.
So far what you're telling me makes sense, especially since I know that you're a photographer yourself. So people will say, focus on a business that you know. You're a photographer, you know it. You had an inspiration for an idea that makes sense that people would need. What's the mistake that now with everything that you understand, you're looking back and you're recognizing that you made?
We didn't talk to customers, so the people who actually have to book the photographers on our site, we didn't talk to them at all.
Okay. You just said, this is necessary, I know the space, I'm going to build it, they're going to love it.
Exactly.
You're smiling now, it sounds ridiculous in retrospect.
Yes, but that's how we used to do business. Mm-hmm. Before I did the foundation, that's how I used to do business, yeah.
Okay. All right, and now you did things differently. One of the first things you decided to do was look for a market. In fact, was that the very first thing that you did? Is that where you start, finding a market first or looking for an idea first?
Yeah, we started with the market. Yeah. And there are can I explain a bit about the foundation, or do you want to say that? Because it's not all, it's not my idea. I followed a training, it's called the foundation, and there's a really a process in which you approach the whole entrepreneur thing. Mm-hmm. So we started with choosing a market there based on a couple of criteria. Mm-hmm. And then you start interviewing people in the market to find their pain.
Okay.
And so you move on.
So first you find a market. And yeah, the foundation is a program created by Dane Maxwell, Andy Drish. I think Dane launched it here by introducing the idea to the Mixergy audience, seeing if any of them needed it. He basically was validating his idea, got a lot of response for it, and he said, all right, I'm going to go through with it. And one of the beliefs that they have is a belief that they share with me, which is you should find your customer's pain before you find your inspiration for the business. And so that's what you did. But you say you wanted to start with the market first. How did you pick photography? Was it just that you knew it?
No, I actually hesitated to choose it because I know a lot of photographers, so it was a bit scary because, well, you have to deliver if you want to start a business amongst almost friends, you know.
Yeah.
So I first picked a completely different market, which is moving companies.
Okay.
And I just started cold calling them.
Okay.
But then there was this one criteria, is you really have to like your market because you're going to spend so much time in it, building your product, investigating, interviewing people. So after a while, I thought, I like photography. I like photographers. Why shouldn't I do that? So I switched.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you have to, one of the criteria is that you have to like your market. Is there another criteria? Like, do they have to have a certain amount of money? Does the market have to be a certain size?
Yeah.
What else?
Certain size, certain profitability is preferred.
Okay.
Photographers, not all photographers fit that criteria. I have to say that. Dane also warned me for that. But there's another criteria, is that they are willing to pay for software. Like on a monthly recurring basis, and that they're used to do that. Because if you're already used to paying like $10 for Dropbox or whatever, then it's easier to pay for something else. And I knew for a fact, because I'm one of them myself, photographers are like that. So for me,
how did you know beyond yourself that photographers are used to spending money on a monthly basis for software?
I'm in a lot of networks online with photographers, so we talk about stuff.
What kind of software have you seen other photographers use?
A lot of people use album proofing software.
Okay.
Yes, they design albums and then they have to show their clients their designs.
Okay.
And clients have feedback on every page, so there's software who makes that all very convenient and easy.
And so you notice that they do pay for that on a monthly basis.
Yes.
How about another one? What other software do they use on a monthly basis?
Website and image delivery software.
Okay.
There's a guy, and he has a company called ShowIt, and he's doing real good with online software. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So you like the market. It's a big market. Some of them have money, not all of them, and they're used to paying for software. This is your market. These are your friends. It's time now to do what you didn't do with the first business, which is have conversations with them. Now, these conversations could go all over the place. How do you keep them focused so that you end up with an idea that you can go and build a business around?
Again, there's a structure for that. We have a lot of questions that we can ask, the flow of the conversation. You want to have a couple of ideas, a couple of pains that they can talk about, and then you find out which is the most annoying, most painful problem.
How do you do that? So that's your goal for the call, to find a collection of pains and then see which of those pains is so powerful that they'd want a solution for it. How do you identify what's painful for people?
It's difficult. You have to learn to do interviews.
How did you do it? When you did it well?
I still have to learn a lot, I think.
Okay, that's all right. Yeah. But you obviously got far enough that you were able to close more sales now with this business before you launched than you were with the first one, which you actually launched and you had a partner and track record with. So take me maybe to your most powerful call. Can you break down what you did on that call to identify a pain point that a photographer had?
Some things happen by coincidence. Mm-hmm. So there's one call that I remember very vividly because he wasn't interested at all in my product, but he was rambling on. He was talking about his own solution, how he did things. And I was like, okay, I'll just hear him out. But then days later, I thought of it again because somebody else mentioned something that clicked. So I had to piece the puzzles together to see, hey, he has the same issue as she has. And then I started validating other people.
I see. So when he was rambling, what's the issue that you noticed that he had?
Well, for this particular thing, he said, well, because I was thinking of doing some kind of referral software in my tool. And he said, well, I don't like all leads because all inquiries are not equally valuable for me because I only work on Fridays. And I only work when my partner has or whatever, something. And he had a whole spreadsheet where he kept track of his available dates. And so this available dates thing got a thing. And a lot of people had that.
A lot of people had some kind of spreadsheet with available dates. And then if they booked a date, they would make it unavailable. I see. And then you started to identify a problem with that spreadsheet.
Yeah, it is a problem and it is also an opportunity because if I have the available dates of all photographers, they can easily refer leads to each other.
I see.
From within the tool. So it was an extra, very valuable feature for me to make a solution for.
Gotcha. And that all happened because you were just listening to this guy ramble, you noticed a pain, and then you said, I've got to validate it. And we'll come back to the validation in a moment, but you told April that you talked to dozens of people, somewhere between 50 and 100 people. So I'm thinking of two things there. First of all, how do you find 50 to 100 photographers who are potential customers?
How?
I'm thinking of the person who's listening to us right now goes, all right, I have to make these phone calls. And I know what's going on in his head or her head. It's, holy crap, how am I going to get 50 to 100 people? And then, holy crap, how am I going to get myself comfortable with calling 50 to 100 strangers and just talking to them and letting them ramble and figuring out their problems and not having them say I'm too busy? So let's take the first one first, which is, how do you get these people? Where do you find 50 to 100 potential customers?
You can find them in a lot of different ways. You have to think about where are they?
Yep.
And I knew for a fact that my audience was on Facebook. So it's easy to connect with people on Facebook. Okay. And I am in a couple of groups with wedding photographers. So it's really, really easy to connect with them. And I know from a lot of colleagues from within the foundation that they found their audience on LinkedIn. And in LinkedIn, you can go into groups. And within groups, you can message people.
Okay.
So, and there are lots of different ways to find people to connect.
Where's the biggest source of potential customers for you? It was Facebook. Talking to strangers on Facebook.
Yeah.
And you would just find them, see that they're photographers, and ping them on Facebook messaging and ask them to talk to you.
Yeah.
What's the hook for them to talk to you? You're not a customer.
I know. After a while, I knew their pain.
So what about before? So if you know my pain and you're calling me up and you say, hey, Andrew, I know that you've got a problem where you can't schedule all your photo shoots. I think I have a solution. I'm excited if I have that problem. But what about before when you're just trying to just rap with me and trying to figure out where the problem is?
Just send them a short note Listen, I got a real strange question, but I want to know what's the biggest pain in your business from day to day, you know, stuff like that.
I would blow that off. I get emails like that.
And now you
keep people from blowing it off.
A lot of people respond.
They did. Just asking them straight up like that, hey, I want to understand. But did you give them an incentive? Did you say, hey, I'm going to build software for photographers? I'm a photographer myself.
Yeah, after we went into a conversation, I told that, but not in the beginning.
Not in the
email. Or you could test different ways and see which one works better.
Okay.
And I also, with the cold calling with the moving agencies, I didn't know any of them. They were completely cold calls. And I was like, totally scared that they would say, you're bothering me, go away. And they would probably do that, but I got lucky, I guess. So I got 100% of the people just willing to talk to me, and they talked to me for half an hour right from the start.
And
so
Esther,
you can
in that
ask
case, I just interrupted you, which I shouldn't be doing.
No
but
problem.
In that case with the movers, what you did was you just found their phone numbers online, you picked up the phone, you called them. You didn't even have to hunt them down on Facebook. You didn't have to ask their permission for a call. You just called them up.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so now we've got two different approaches to how to get people on the phone to ask them questions. Let's talk about how to get you comfortable with making a phone call. It's not easy.
No.
Talk about, before you even talk about the solution, let me and my audience identify with the problem so that we don't just blow it off and go, oh, she doesn't know how to do it. If you start describing in detail what was going on in your head, I bet the person listening to us will go, oh yeah, I thought I was a he-man. I thought I was a she-man or she-woman, whatever. And I relate to that. So give us a couple of the things that went through your head.
Before the first calls, yep. I was like looking at the phone a lot.
Uh-huh.
No, I think I postponed it for a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this exercise from Byron Katie that is describing how to write down your biggest thoughts and fears. So I wrote them down, and it's like, oh man, I'm bothering them. They're not, what will they say? Who do you think you are? They will think that, you know, stuff like that. All these thoughts are going through your head. They were going through my head. And I had to reprogram that.
This is Byron Katie, just to make sure that it comes across. I never heard of his questioning. I've been doing the same thing here with my audience in private, where we force ourselves to write down these insecure thoughts that we have in our heads, what we've been calling the countermind. You want to do something like make a phone call, there's a part of your head that just wants to counter it. And if you write it down and you pay attention to it, it starts to take away some of its power. I thought I was the genius who came up with this on my own, but apparently someone else did too. The point though is, apparently it works, right? It works for you to put this stuff down.
Yeah. Yeah, it works. I think it works for everybody. If you're just paying attention to what your thoughts really are,
yep,
get conscious about it, then it will work. Because Byron Katie has a book, 4 Questions That Will Change Your Life. And I think the second question is it really true?
Yep.
What you just wrote down? And you know it's not true. Those people don't know me, so how can they think, what the hell is she thinking calling me? I mean, there will be just that I want to invest my time in their problems.
Yeah. All right. So you did this exercise to really come to terms with what was going on in your head, what that inner chatter was, and that helped reduce it. What about the fact that you're in a group of other people who are all making phone calls? Did that help?
Yeah, that helped too.
Do you have an example of a time maybe when you were stalled and you saw, hey, all these other people are making phone calls, not such a big deal?
Yeah, there's the foundation has a private chat room, so everybody just goes there and says, I'm really scared to pick up the phone. And other people are saying, I just did my first phone call. So that really helps to see that everybody is having the same fears and just doing it anyway and making progress, because that's really motivating to see that people are booking success or having success.
Testing. Good. We're back. And by the way, editor, keep my ramble about how we're having trouble with the software in there. I don't want people to think that I'm editing because Esther said something and I wanted to keep it out of the interview. I want people to know I'm editing just because we have tech issues. We never edit for content. All right. I understand who you called. I understand what you did. How you hunted down a problem, how you checked in with them and said, is this a real problem for you? All that is good stuff. But people will sometimes say stuff like, yeah, this is a great problem, or Esther, way to go, you found software that I like. But that's not enough validation. As I said at the top of the interview, money is the validator. Is that true?
Yes.
Why? Why is money different from having somebody say, yeah, if you build it, I will pay?
Well, then you know. As soon as the money is in the bank, you know that they're willing to pay.
There's no doubt about it at that point.
There's no doubt about it.
Okay.
No.
To get to the point where you can actually say, pay me, I think what you did, you told April Dykeman in the pre-interview, you just used pencil and pen and you sketched out your idea. Is that right?
Yeah.
And what did they say when they saw your idea?
I think I showed it only to two photographers.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, yeah, that could work. So then I moved on to Keynote.
Keynotopia.
Keynotopia. I sketched it in there, or how do you call it?
Mm-hmm.
And I made a whole working demo prototype, which is nothing more than a PowerPoint or presentation slides. But it looked like
Keynotopia does is it lets you create mock-ups that look like fully functioning software in Keynote, yeah. The Apple program. Actually, I think he also now, Amir, who created that, also has a software for PCs that works on PowerPoint.
Oh, yeah, he does.
He does, yeah. Right? So when you showed that to them, I guess what you did was, if I understand this right, you found some people who said, yes, we have this problem. We can't schedule properly. And if you can make it easy for us to schedule, then we'd love your program, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And you then sketched it out and you showed it to a few of them. They gave you some feedback. Then you went to Keynotopia and you created a full mock-up of it. And then you took it to the people who said, Esther, we have a scheduling problem, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I did so.
Your first version wasn't perfect out of the gate, was it?
No, not at all.
So what's some of the helpful feedback that you got that you wouldn't have known if you didn't show them the mock-up?
A lot. I don't create anything anymore without showing it to my customers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, yeah. You really think you know it all. I really think I know it all when designing my app, but every time somebody tells me a little thing that I could change or that's not clear or that could be better. And it's the little things, colors, positioning.
Do you have a specific example of something that you learned by talking to your customers with a mock-up in hand?
Yeah, I created a dashboard with little dots that they have to move forward to complete every booking. And I made them orange made every dot orange. I don't know why. It looked funky. And then I got the feedback to make the colors represent the due time or due date. So if they are past due, they should be red. And if there's still time, they're green. And then somebody else came after that and said, well, can you add in the last task or the next task in the little dot? So it got bigger and bigger and more valuable.
Because the idea is not just to give them a calendar replacement, but to allow them to keep track of where they are with their customers throughout the photo shoot. I mean, throughout the planning for the shoot, because a shoot isn't pick up the phone, call up a photographer, say, what are your days? He says Friday, and you say, okay, go for it. It's more like months in advance, right?
Yeah, specifically for wedding and portrait photographers.
Okay.
And their pain is the big responsibility of delivering the best job they can do on the perfect day of people's life.
Yep.
So it's a big responsibility. And they always book them months in advance. So there are a lot of different milestones, calls, notes, meals sent in between that time. And they have to track all that. And then after the wedding day, delivery starts. And they have a specific deadline for each shoot. But portrait shoots, they fly in between and they have shorter deadlines. So they have to, sometimes they don't know what photos they should work on.
I see.
Give people the right priority.
And this will allow them. Mm-hmm.
And with my tool, it's crystal clear. They can see it in one glance. Yeah.
You mentioned all the different feedback that you got when you showed people a mock-up. That's helpful, but it can also be overwhelming. You don't want to start to satisfy everybody because then you end up with this monster of a program that no one understands how to use because there are too many features. How did you decide what to include and what to say, I'm sorry, I can't put that in version one?
I read a book from 37 Signals, Get Real.
Uh-huh.
And that really helped because my first sketches were like 20 pages, 20 screens with all different functionalities. So that was the monster at first. And then I read the book and I did every step of the book. I just wrote every step of the book, all the exercises in the book, I did that. And then after that book, I could see the real pain is in these 8 screens. So that's what I should build first. And that's the mock-up that I showed people to give me money with.
Wait, you wrote down all the pain points that people had, all the things that they wanted, and you said, whatever they want, of all these features, you highlighted the ones that were most applicable to the pain that you were addressing.
Yeah.
I see. So what's a feature that you had to say no to in version one? Help me understand this process a little bit more.
The calendar.
The calendar?
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought I really should have a calendar in there. But the biggest pain is to see where you're at. And you have a specific workflow and you want to know what step are you. And you want to know it for all your shoots. And you want to know what's the first task that you have to do. And you don't need a calendar for that.
Right. What you need is, if I'm remembering right from your software, it's columns with the steps that the photographer takes and rows with the clients and those dots move along the columns from left to right as each step is taken care of, right?
Yep.
And that's more important than a calendar, even though a calendar is nice to have.
Yeah. Everybody wants a calendar, but yeah.
This seems to have veered a little bit off of what you initially started out wanting to do, which is to help people keep track of when they were free, and if a customer of theirs wasn't available on a day that they were free, who they can recommend that customer go talk to. That was the original idea.
Yeah.
And it evolved to this as you were talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, actually, I'm building the calendar and the availability calendar as well.
Okay.
But it wasn't the most minimum viable product, as they call it, in Getlean. And I used the minimum viable product to get me the money.
Okay.
Yeah.
And your minimum viable product wasn't actually completed software. And we'll get to how you're building the software in a bit. But the minimum viable product, as I understand it, was an info pack.
Yeah.
What's in the info pack?
Just the mockups.
It's just the mockups. Now here's the mockup. This is what the program will do. Do you like it? Yeah. And if you do, you're saying, pay me.
Yeah, and I created a little Kickstarter program so they could choose from a lifetime subscription or 2 years or 6 months. So I had a little price for everybody.
Did you put it on Kickstarter?
No. It was just a slide in my presentation.
I see. It's just, yeah. If you pay me this amount, you'll get a lifetime account. If you pay me this amount, you'll get a discounted 6 month period, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because here's what I'm seeing. What you told April was 6 months in advance gets you a 10% discount. That doesn't seem huge.
No.
They're paying you in advance. Where do you get the courage to say to someone, pay me in advance, I don't have software, and I'm going to give you 10% off?
Yeah.
It's just from going through this process?
Yeah, I think so. And it's also marketing because it's psychological. I mean, you first say the lifetime subscription is 1,000 euros, and you say 2 years in advance is 400 euros, and then you say 6 months is only 192.
Okay, so you don't present it as 10% discount. You present it as a number that looks smaller than the other number.
I think that's why people chose it. Most people chose the middle part, but some people chose the 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a smaller amount, and they still wanted to get in because they get the 10% for life. So it's nice.
I see. Yeah, Dane Maxwell did a course, one of the first ones on Mixergy about copywriting, and it still does really well. And one of the tips that he gave there is he talked about the idea of anchoring a price. You don't want to just give a price. You want to give it in relationship to a huge price. And the example that we used in that course was Steve Jobs saying, people think that this iPad's going to cost $1,000, but they're wrong. It's going to cost $600 or whatever the original amount was. And suddenly the $600 seems less. It feels like a bargain.
Yeah.
It just anchored you to think about the higher number first.
Yeah.
All right. Where did you learn how to do all this sales stuff? Again, the foundation.
I know a little bit about branding and a little bit about marketing, but not as what I learned in the foundation. Is much more the stuff that you need as an entrepreneur, as a real entrepreneur, the one that sells. Yes.
Not the one that has inspiring ideas.
Exactly.
How many pre-sales did you get?
So far, 23.
23 people paid you. Money's already in the bank.
Yeah, yeah.
That's already been collected and paid.
Yes.
I see. All right. So you got this. Now you're supposed to use this money to go and get a developer.
Oh, no. He's already working on it.
He did.
Yeah.
Where did you get your developer?
In Odesk. Okay. He's from Poland. And he's the best.
How many pre-sales did you want? You got 23 total. How many pre-sales did you wait to get before you hired him?
I wanted to have like 2,000 or 3,000 euros before I started hiring.
I see. And you felt that that was enough validation.
Yeah.
What was that? Like 5, 10 people, right?
Yeah. Something like that.
So I've asked this of several entrepreneurs who are non-developers who hire developers. If you don't know how to code, how do you know who to hire? How do you know if the work that they do is good?
Yeah, it's really scary. I mean, I procrastinated on hiring a developer like for 2 or 3 weeks. But again, the foundation had a real good process where they said step by step what to do. So I just followed that process to the letter. And there's also people in the foundation who can help you evaluate developers. So I used those as well.
Walk me through the process. I don't want people to hear that that too many of the answers are, well, the foundation has the answer, because then they're going to say, Andrew, why the hell are you interviewing Esther instead of interviewing the foundation?
Yes.
And we'll do that. But I want to hear your experience. So what helped you find the developer? What's the process that you used?
It starts with a job description.
Okay.
So you just write down what you want your developer to develop. Like steps, I wrote down my screens. I think I even included my my mockups.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked around what would be a good language to write this in. So people said, well, Ruby on Rails or Python is good. So I just chose one. I don't know why. I just chose one.
Yep.
And I put that in the job description. And then it goes out, and there are a couple of filters that you can use to skim through all the people that apply.
What's one of the filters?
One of the filters is whether they are working for an agency or whether they are working independent.
Which do you prefer? So,
well, when people are working for an agency, it's not always like that, but sometimes they can just switch around people and you don't know who you're working with anymore.
I've had that. Very frustrating.
Yeah, you have to explain your product again, which is not helpful. So I just wanted to have independent people. You can use a phrase in your application, like funky tomatoes, whatever, and have them put that in their application. So you know at least they read it, which is also very helpful if people just read what you're writing.
Yeah, so because a lot of people on these platforms just copy and paste the same response to everyone because they want to apply for all the jobs and hope, and whatever one they get, they'll figure out how to do.
Yeah.
And that's just basically spam. So yeah, Derek Sivers, I think, told me to have a question that just makes sure that they're human.
Oh, cool.
Kind of like CAPTCHA within email. And what yours is, you want to just, yours is simple as saying, if you're human, use the word funky tomato somewhere in your application.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It could be anywhere, so it's really fun to see what they come up with. Yeah, and that really brings down the number of applications from 40 to 3 in my case.
Okay.
And then you can have the final people do a test, a developer's test. And you have somebody evaluate their coding. And that's what I did. So,
So where did you find the test to give them?
oh, from the foundation.
They had a test that you used to give the developer. What was the test?
It was a Ruby on Rails test. I have no idea what it was, actually. So I was
It was
like,
just a test,
okay.
and then someone else in the foundation who's a developer, another member, said,
Yeah.
yeah, this guy did a good job.
Yeah.
Okay.
And also, it was actually Ruben Gamez from,
BidSketch.
I guess, yeah, you know
He's,
him.
yeah, he's a mentor or something. He's a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
And so you went to him and you said, hey, this is what the guy at Odesk gave me. What he, I don't even know. I'm not going to look at it. Is this good? Did you pay the developer, the Odesk developer, to take this test? You did. What did you pay for the test?
One guy took 2 hours, so it was like $30, and the other guy did it and he didn't even charge me. So
Okay.
guess which one I chose. It was
Actually,
also.
shouldn't they both have charged you? Wouldn't you want the person who charges you because he fits it, your ethos more? Or you're just starting out and so you wanted the better deal?
Actually, it was a combination of both because the communication was also nicer with the guy from Poland.
Okay.
And so,
And he was the guy who didn't
just.
charge you, who said, "Hey, I could do this. I'll solve it," and you hired him. Me again, make sure to save. How much did it cost you to have the whole thing built?
I think I'm at 13,000 euros now. And
Okay.
he's still building. So. I'm investing my own money now as well.
Okay. How much of your own money did you put into it?
Well, now about 2,000.
Okay. And so, what do you do with the people who've paid you to keep them up to date or to keep them from saying, hey, I wanted this software, where are you?
I already put them on the software for the minimum viable product. And I'm launching now with the calendar as well. So they
So you
already
already,
have a.
the software is launched?
No. It's the beta, you know?
The beta version is launched. So this thing that I described earlier with the columns and the dots that you talked about that change color based on how late you are, where you are in the process, that's already up and running and you gave it to your beta testers who paid you. I see. Any problems that they discovered that you didn't know about before?
No.
Okay. So basically the software that you promised them is there in their hands. It's just bare bones. And it's not available to anyone else yet. I went on your site just a moment ago and you said coming soon. It didn't even say July 1st, said sometime the summer. Okay. And it's collecting email addresses. How are you getting people to come to that page now and give you their email address?
I write emails to people as well. There are a lot of websites from wedding photographer collectives. So I just write them and I tell them I have a really cool tool.
And you
Come to my site.
come to my site. I have a cool tool, and you want them to review it?
I want them to subscribe to my mailing list and to know that it's getting there the 1st of July.
Okay. So you're just saying, hey, I've got this cool tool. It's coming out 1st of July. You should add yourself to my list because when it launches, you're going to want to be one of the first people to find out about it.
Well, different words, of course.
What are your words? What do you say?
I actually use a bit of fear to get their attention to open the email.
What's the fear?
The fear is that they are forgetting a wedding or forgetting a shoot or forgetting an
Okay.
appointment. So I use a subject line that says, "Where are you?"
Because you know that for photographers, that triggers fear.
It triggers, yeah.
And
I
then
know
how do
for
you
sure.
carry it through with the body?
And then I tell them, as a wedding photographer myself, I know that this is one of the worst fears to forget something, and that's why I'm building ShootZilla.
Ah, I see. Where are you? They open it up and you go, hey, as a photographer, I know those are some of the hardest words to hear. That's why I'm building ShootZilla, etc. If you want access, come to the site, add your email.
Yes.
How many email addresses do you have?
So far, 60 or 70.
60 or 70 people who've gone through this process and given you their email.
Yeah.
Have you stopped selling now because you're working on building the product?
Yeah.
You have. How many people started out the foundation?
I think about 300.
Was it 300? I thought it was more.
More?
I don't know, actually.
Okay. Yeah, there are different tiers. So in my tier, the elite tier with coaching and all, I think there were 300.
I see. Okay, right. And I think it was more of people. You went to elite. There were people who went for a smaller option. Overall, it was a big number. Not everyone managed to get pre-sales. The people who didn't, what did they do wrong? I want to learn from them.
Yeah. Should I answer that?
Yeah, of course. I mean, we're not going to talk about anyone specifically, but we do want to learn from them.
I think sometimes it's time and mindset.
So they weren't willing to put in the time?
Yeah, or they're not productive enough, getting distracted a lot.
Okay.
And I know for a fact how difficult it is to stay on track. I mean, I have that issue every week. So you really have to be focused. You have to have a clear why you are doing it. And if people don't have that, they might just drift off and don't see the importance of it anymore.
I see. What was your why?
My why is to have an income, which is location independent, that supports me and my family.
I see. And you wanted that so badly that you were willing to push off other things so that you can stay focused on this.
Yes.
How many people would you say got pre-sales?
I'm not sure. 30 or 40?
Okay.
I'm not sure.
If you were listening to this, we're almost at the end of the interview. If you were listening to this 2 years ago and you heard everything that you and I just said, there would still be one thing that would be missing that we didn't talk about. What would that be? What else would you need in order to implement this process that we just talked about?
The most important thing we discussed, it's your mindset and why.
Mindset because and mission. So if we could just, we just laid out the whole process. Anyone can use this process. They won't have as much help and support along the way as you did, but they'll have a process that works. Find a market that you love that's big enough where people are used to paying, et cetera, right? We talked about that in the beginning. Then start to call people in that market, and we talked about how to do it, whether you just pick up the phone like you did when you were in the moving company, or go on Facebook and LinkedIn and ask them to call you or give you their number so you can call them. You're contacting them. Then you talk to them and you look for their pain. Sometimes you just let them ramble until you hit on a pain. And you come back once you find that pain. See, you're nodding. So tell me if I'm wrong at any point. I want you to call me out because I want to understand your process. Then you find a pain that's consistent that several people have had. And you come back. And in fact, you found several. And then you look for the one that's the most painful. And you go back to the people who all express it. And you say, is this what you're feeling? Right? Okay.
Yeah.
Then you say, I think I can solve it. If I solve it with this, would you be willing to pay? Then you sent them a Kinotopia mock-up with that solution. And you said, if I build this, will you pay? And in fact, if you pay, here are the different levels that you can pay at. That's essentially what you did.
That's essentially what you did. Yeah. And it's always, the details are a lot of, yeah. You can send a mock-up and not follow up. Or you can do a one-on-one Skype webinar where you share your screen and you hear direct feedback, which is what I did.
I see.
So in one approach, it won't work. But the other approach, you direct feedback, and you know if the people are just saying nice because they want to please you or if they really want to have it.
I see.
Because you can look them in the eye.
I see. You do a conversation like this with the screen sharing, and you say, so the first screen you're going to see is this. And if they go like that, you yes. realize they're a little confused. I was trying to do a confused face. I don't think that came
across. It came across.
I gotcha. All right. Let me do a quick plug here, and then I want to ask you one final question. The plug is for Mixergy Premium. if you've heard this, I always want to recommend some programs as follow-ups to my interviews because that's what people like the best. So since we talked about the foundation, I'm going to suggest a few things. First, two interviews with Dane Maxwell. The first one where he talked about how he built his software company. The second one where he came in and talked about, it was the one where he announced the foundation, where he said what his vision was, what he was trying to do. And then there are two other programs that would be helpful. The one with Sam Ovens, where he talked about how he went through this process and created software. Who is that in the background? Your parents?
My dad.
Your dad. Yeah. I'm going to come back and ask you about that. Thanks for doing this interview from your father's place, from your parents' place. And what else can I recommend as a follow-up to this? Yes, yes, yes. If you want to hear what a phone call is like when you're doing idea extraction, Dane Maxwell gave me a copy of his call that he did with a potential customer where he figured out his problem and he showed how this whole process works. Hey, do you record your calls the way that Dane did?
No, I didn't.
You don't. You just get on the phone and you talk to them. All right. All those available to Mixergy Premium members. And don't forget the course. I shouldn't forget the course that I talked about earlier about copywriting, where Dane talked about how to anchor prices, how to make a price that's high seem not so high by coming up with another price and putting it side by side with the price that you really want. All right, all that's at MixergyPremium.com. I guarantee you'll love it. I met Dane because he was a Mixergy Premium member, and I'm hoping that you, the person who's listening to me, will go and become a member too. All right, why are you still at your parents' house?
My kids are going to bed at exactly the time that we had the interview planned, so I thought it's quieter here.
You can be quieter. So here's the thing. The real final question is this. I asked you at the beginning of the interview, what's a win for you? And you said, hey, Andrew, frankly, you don't have that many photographers who are listening, and I don't need to come talk to other entrepreneurs about my business to get a handful of photographers to come over. I've got better ways to do it. So I said, then what is a win for you? And you said, I want other female entrepreneurs to know that they could do this. Why? What's the challenge that that female entrepreneurs have?
Same challenges everybody has. It's just I hear a lot of female entrepreneurs who think they can't do it because it sounds too big or too difficult. And yeah, just slice it up. Just make it small, baby steps all the way. And it all starts with the knowing your thoughts, knowing your fears, and the big why. And you can do it.
Yeah. We've got examples on Mixergy of literally, I can actually say that properly, literally hundreds of entrepreneurs who have. And I'm hoping that the person who's listening to me will continue to build their business if they started it, or start a business if they haven't. And one day, just like Esther, be here and let me do an interview about how they built their business. So Esther, thanks for doing this interview. To you, the listener,
thanks
or the reader,
you.
If you're reading the transcript. Sorry, I just stepped on what you said. I said, thank you for saying you're welcome. And I just kept on rambling.
No problem.
And to the person who's watching this, thank you for being a part of this. And I'm hoping to see you up on Mixergy sometime where I can talk over you, just like I talked over Esther quite a few times here. All right. Thank you all. Bye.